Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us we have D.L.W. Hudson, who has taught philosophy for 15 years at three major universities, published, edited, and managed print and digital magazines for over 20 years, founded, led, and managed a Catholic advocacy organization for 7 years, created the strategy to lead Catholic outreach in 4 national elections, 3 of them winning, and created and managed 3 Catholic websites. In February of 2014, Dr. Hudson launched a radio show, Church and Culture, on the Ave Maria Radio Network, which airs twice a week on Saturdays and Sundays in all the major media markets in the country. And in January 2015, he launched The Christian Review, which can be found at www.thechristianreview.com. Today we'll be discussing his book, How to Keep from Losing Your Mind, Educating Yourself Classically to Survive Cultural Indoctrination. Welcome to the show, D.L.
Pete, thanks a lot. And listening to that intro makes me very tired all of a sudden.
Well, it seems like you've accomplished a lot from the bio that Tan Books provided.
69 years worth of work.
There you go. All right. So, first of all, great book. I think it's a very timely read, and I would recommend that once people finish listening to this show, they do go out and get it. Can you give us an overview of what the book's about for those who have not read it?
Well, I think, let me start with why.
Okay.
And I think your listeners, if they're like me at all, over the last few years, maybe longer, have just got so tired and worn out of waking up to bad news. Or waking up to public quarreling, waking up to changes in society, changes in education, changes even in the Catholic Church that you would have never dreamed of. I would have never dreamed of.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was going crazy with this. And you see a lot of this on social media. I mean, I don't get as revved up as others do, but, you know, I have post my complaint, and I decided, you know, this is not where I want to be in my life. After all, I've been given this tremendous gift of a great education, of life experiences that have greatly broadened me and, you know, given me a better understanding of human nature and all the ups and downs of that. And I decided I was going to write a book that really represented who I am and what I think I have accomplished. And that being a combination of books, whether it's philosophy, fiction, poetry, history, the music, all the classical music, Western world, which I discovered when I was only 18 and have pursued my entire lifetime. Even taught some music at a federal prison in Atlanta. And films, which we all go to films. It's the dominant art form. But about 15 years ago, I decided to systematically study all the films in the world cinema in all the different languages. So I became a big fan of what are called foreign films, realizing that many of the very, very best films that we can see, is, you know, especially as Catholics, Christians, were in not in the English language. So I put all of this together in my book, and I aimed it at those who say there's no objective truth, that beauty is entirely a matter of subjective taste, to the educrats who are trying to undermine the Western tradition and deny its virtues, its great legacy that's left this nation and other nations. What I did was I sort of looked in the mirror and I said, now, what should I do to reverse this tendency toward insanity? And realized I needed to go back to my faith, go back to my education, back to the basics, and back to the beauty that has upheld me as a human being all my life.
So a two-part question, and we'll get deeper into more of what the book's about. But many people think of books and those when they talk about classics. So focusing on books, what defines a book as a classic, and why should we spend time with them?
Well, I mean, the main reason you should spend time with it, because you'll love it, and you won't want to put it down, and you'll say, I don't want to read any of the books except those by Tolstoy or Dostoevsky or Mark Twain. Books are classics because they have grabbed people by the throat, by the mind, by the heart, and shaken them over and over, lifted them up, helped them to be wiser for centuries. Mm-hmm. I mean, Homer doesn't stay on the curriculum simply because stuffy old white man insists that we should read it. It stays in the curriculum because it tells the story of human life in such a dramatic way, such an insightful way and powerful way, that it has let, as it were, used to educate young men and women since the Middle Ages. And, of course, now that stands side by side with Scripture, of course. And this is exactly how the Western tradition as we know it was a synthesis of Christianity, Judaism, Greek, Roman, and a few other traditions. But basically, it was a union of the Christian tradition with the classical traditions of Greece and Rome. And so these books have fed each other and have formed the basis of what's considered a classical education. Since the late Middle Ages.
So one thing I'd like to discuss and get your thoughts on, we're in a society that's so used now with the advent of the internet, of these quick snippets of information. So I'd like to get your thoughts on the lost craft of sitting down with a good book. How can we return to
that? Well, you saw in the book that I went after that one quite a bit.
Yes, you did.
On the one hand, though, I said, with all that's found on the internet now, there's no excuse not to be educating yourself. You can get all the history of classical music. You can get three copies of the great classic books, almost everything. It's found on Gutenberg and other places. You can see a lot of the films that I talk about in my book for free on the internet. But there's no question that instead of people treating the internet as a vast library where they go and sit down in a dark corner for an hour or two and really deepen their understanding of things, they treat the internet like it was a smorgasbord. You know, I'll have a little of this dessert, a little of that appetizer and a little of this. And of course, I'll eat them in one bite and move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the internet has impacted our attention, our quality of our attention, and also given us the false notion that education itself is at our fingertips. All we have to do is look for it and get a quick explanation off Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an education.
Mm-hmm.
It's like knowing where the tops of mountains are, but not knowing what country they're in.
Right.
Or even what mountain range they're in. So we have sort of, as it said, let ourselves not stop being educated historically, because we can always go to Wikipedia and read about the history of the Russian Revolution. And that's not how you learn the importance of the Russian Revolution, or of the French Revolution, or the American Revolution, the Civil Rights Movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of just seeing a couple of movies and reading clips off the internet. It's a matter of thinking deeply about these things and thinking with the people who have thought the best about them.
Right.
And that provide the most insight and the most ability to make us aspire to be better people, aspire to create better homes, better families, aspire to seek out what is best and highest and most enduring in our culture.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the other aspect of that is when you're going to those sources like Wikipedia, you mentioned that you're only getting the tip of the iceberg, but you're also getting a filtered interpretation of it as well.
Yeah. You know, when Wikipedia first came out, it was highly prejudiced. A lot of that's been taken out because of the way they allow multiple editors.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a definite political slant on anything you read in there that's political, and in some sense historical as well. You know, that's another thing I take on in my book, as you know, is the politicization of all education. And, you know, pretty much from the beginning to the end, you know, it started under the banner of multiculturalism, which basically was a good idea. You know, the idea that students should know more about the literature, history, values, religions, face of other countries. But what happened was, and this was evidently intentional by many of its founders, the idea was to, you know, also say, look, these values and this understanding of human nature and society that we've gotten from the Western classics, well, they're all a product of white privilege and a product of self-interest and colonialism. And we shouldn't be listening to those voices anymore. And so you've got the old tradition of Western classics and all the various forms being tossed out or being treated only as meat for the feminist meat grinder.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we have plenty more to discuss. It was a great book. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media.
Are you married? I'd like to suggest that you often return to the fond and true memory of your spouse when you first met and on your wedding day. Well, he or she is still that same lovable person. Perhaps life has presented many challenges you did not expect back then, but you have come through these together. And the providential fire of your tribulations and your love has forged you into the one body you are today. And that is a beautiful thing. Never let anyone or any inferior thing tear you and your spouse asunder. God is one with you. He is love. Your marriage is love. And love endures whatever comes. It does not come to an end. See 1 Corinthians 13. I'm Jim Littleton of FormingFaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Today we're spending it with Deal Hudson discussing his book, How to Keep from Losing Your Mind, Educating Yourself Classically to Survive Cultural Indoctrination. Very timely read. And Deal, you touched upon this in the first segment. You suggest, we commonly see these great books lists. You suggest we should expand that into film and music. Why is that important for us to do, and what did you discover when you did that?
Well, I found that in putting them side by side, I realized they were all about the same thing. They were about the human experience, the human journey, life from birth to death and after. But film, music, and books all have this in common. And so there is a way, if you train yourself to do it, and sometimes just notice the obvious affinities that they have, to compare, say, what Tolstoy's vision of human suffering is with what Bach's is, say, in the B minor, the Great Mass in B minor, or what is St. Matthew Passion, which is about suffering. And then you could go over to the great French filmmaker, Catholic filmmaker, Robert Bresson, and compare it to what he says about suffering in his films, like The Diary of a Country Priest. They're obviously, when you think of the idea of love itself, I mean, love is the subject of so many books, so much music, and so many films, that it's almost endless. And this is true if you pick ideas like justice or happiness, or anguish, or fear, of resignation, any basic concept of human experience, you can take these cultural products that we think so highly of and compare and contrast them in ways that are very, very fruitful and create, for me, and I think for most, incredible insights. This is why at the last part of the book, I took C.S. Lewis's idea of the four basic loves, and I treated books, film, and music under each of those rubrics, beginning with parental love, then going to friendship, then going to erotic love, love of desire, and then ending with God's love, or agape. And so in all of those, I challenged myself to find books, whether poetry, novels, philosophy, and then classical music and film, certain films, that I could go back and forth between to show how each of these, whether they're writers, composers, or filmmakers, trying to help us understand this journey we call human existence.
Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about that fourth section, let's get into that a little bit more, because each of those sections, you include what I consider a pretty deep list of these resources you found, whether it be books, music, or film, that people can go to and read, view, or listen to get the points you're making in that chapter. How extensive is that list for those who do not have the book, and how long did it take you to compile it?
Well, I compiled it quickly because it was all in my head. I've been doing this since I was a college student, maybe even as a teenager. I've been thinking this way in terms of the pursuit of these great gifts to all of us. And how expensive is it? Well, again, on the internet, you can get the entire history of classical music on the internet for free on YouTube. And there's no excuse. I mean, in the Kindle edition of my book, every single piece of music that I talk about, I provide a hot link to the music so you can immediately go and listen or watch for yourself. However, there are going to be films that are going to cost money with streaming services. But here's the thing. 20 or 30 years ago, a lot of the films that I mentioned, you couldn't even find them. They weren't even available. But now, because of streaming services like Criterion, Netflix, Hulu, and so forth, relatively inexpensive access to the top 100, 200 films of all time. And so there is a tremendous opportunity to expose yourself to films that are not just in English and not just about action heroes. I mean, we're talking about films that are as profound and deep as the greatest novels, the greatest poetry, and should be treated with the same respect and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing I shared in my book is how going back and rereading classics that I haven't read in decades, for example, Scarlet Letter or Huckleberry Finn or Heart of Darkness, I was so excited about the experience of reading, and I kept would yell at my wife or my son and say, "You gotta listen to this passage. It's so perfect." And you know, a lot of this I didn't pick up 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience was limited, and also and overall, the whole, if there was any personal revelation that I was making in the book, was that I came very late in my life to the reality of human nature in the raw.
Mm.
And I make the comment that I wish I had read as much Shakespeare as I did Aristotle, because all the study I've done of ethics, whether it's Christian ethics or philosophical ethics, you read about the ideal virtues, and what we should aspire to. You know, what is right, what is good. But for one reason or another, I kind of ignored how low we can go as human beings, and how low we do go.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really until I went to Washington, D.C. in 1995 that I began to experience the kind of human nature that you meet in Shakespeare's plays, in King Lear and Macbeth, you know, that you meet in Othello. You know, Othello's a play about betrayal by a loyal friend. And this, you know, these insights that are in these great works complete the picture of what a human being is that you can't find in reading just philosophy.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things there you mentioned, I think we need to pull out and discuss a little bit more, is irregardless of age, you can start this journey like you did and expand your education, and the resources are out there, but you should not think that age is a limiting factor to this, should you?
Well, the mind is an immaterial substance, therefore it has no limitations. If it was a material substance, it would have limits.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, my journey began, as I explained in the very beginning of the book, as a high school student being told about Socrates by the high school janitor. That's where my journey began.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a journey that I only get more excited about as I grow older. And, you know, I was the assistant for three years to a grand old man of American philosophy named Mortimer J. Adler, to whom the book is dedicated. He was the person who invented the great books curriculum back in the 50s. And, you know, he told me, you know, the deal, as I grew older, my mind just got better and better and better. And I was working with him in the late 80s, and he was sharp as a tack. And I think that as people get older, their capacity for depth of reflection, it grows. I mean, it shouldn't shrink. Their bodies may shrink. I mean, we all fight that. But their mental strength should be something that grows up until, you know, they hit the Alzheimer's or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been my experience that, again, to compare what I got out of Moby Dick rereading it this time versus when I read it in my 30s is like night and day.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I read it when I was in my 30s because I learned things from it and it grounded me in what great fiction and great novel writing is.
Mm-hmm.
It became a model to me to compare as a standard for fiction that I would read after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. We're going to take one more quick break. We'll be right back with Deal Hudson. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media.
Popular blogger Catherine Whitaker is a Dr. Pepper superfan, Aggie-loving type A mom of six, with a personality the size of her native Texas. The stressful, premature birth of her fifth child threw her orderly world into chaos and ultimately led her to rethink her priorities. In her new book, Live Big, Love Bigger, Catherine Whitaker shares her journey and challenges you to understand that you too can live a life of authenticity with joy-filled purpose, love, and faith. Her sassy authenticity will make you laugh and cry while encouraging you to be honest about mistakes in every area of your life. Embrace them and find a way to let God redeem it all. Check out Live Big, Love Bigger at Ave Maria Press, or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. We've been spending the day with Deal Hudson, and we're covering his book, How to Keep from Losing Your Mind, Educating Yourself Classically in to Survive Cultural Indoctrination. And, you know, Deal, one of the things interesting here, it's really full of nuggets, and we touched upon this a bit, but I pulled this quote from the book, and you say, the outsourcing of our memory to internet-based organs weakens the power of memory and undermines our ability to tell fact from fiction, end quote. So in our current news cycle and the way things come to us, I would love to hear more of your thoughts on that quote.
Well, people who, citizens of every age who've not been educated in a way that they have kind of secure understanding of what understanding itself, what does it mean to understand something? What does it mean to have a fact versus a non-fact? What does it mean to grasp a truth? They're sitting ducks for what's going on in the media right now. They're absolute sitting ducks. You know, you get some beautiful redhead or some handsome brunette guy up there, you know, completely glamorized by studio lights and whatever celebrity status they have and how many Twitter followers they have. And they say something regardless of how untrue it is or how stupid it is. And, you know, people are sitting there nodding their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they don't have the two things. Because they don't have the background knowledge to understand the context in which these claims are being made, depending on the context. And number two, they haven't made themselves aware of how to tease out situations in which people are lying to us or people are distorting things. You know, a very good example would be you're watching three talking heads. You have the host and one person on one side and one person on another side of a certain issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inevitable that whichever guest is on the side of the host will be treated better, get more time to speak, will not get cut off, will be treated with a smile and all that. Whereas the person the host doesn't agree with will be cut off, you know, sort of subtly or not so subtly put down and have much less time to talk. That kind of stuff is just the beginning of how to become your own editor. I talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, to look at it from the point of view of what an editor does in putting the news together. You emphasize certain points. You exclude certain points. You take certain points and put question marks over them. In other words, you manipulate the news in a way that suit your point of view. Now, when I grew up and we only had the three networks and they only had, you know, they had anchors like Walter Cronkite.
Right.
There was a certain amount of trust we had in them. You didn't hear people complaining of their left bias or their right bias. And then somewhere in the 70s, I guess, or 80s, mostly in the 70s, newscasters became more like activists themselves, to the point where, you know, when Trump was elected, a New York Times columnist wrote that it is our duty as journalists to take this guy out of office, whatever it takes. Now, that's not reporting the news.
Mm-mm.
It's not even close to it. So now when the newspaper arrives, what are you supposed to view that is? I mean, what is that thing? Okay, you can go in the food section or, in my case, the arts section. I can't even read through the A section of either the New York Times or Washington Post because it's all propaganda. Almost every single story.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it is because I have the background of historical understanding, and in some cases, information that I get because I live in Washington and I know people that, you know, run around the Capitol Hill and the White House. But we have made ourselves a nation of sitting ducks for this kind of political posturing, calling itself news, and it simply is not.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're getting all this stuff slammed at us. You're referencing print. It's coming at us from the internet. You know, we all have these handheld devices now that we're strapped to. And the fact that is that we willingly allow ourselves to be chained to it in some instances. How do we focus our attention and turn to reading, listening, and watching the classics? What tips can you give to help us turn the noise off and focus back on a way to classically educate ourselves?
I think, you know, there's two things I want to say. First of all, when anyone does, in fact, find a place to reconnect with these works, whether they're books, music, or film, they're going to love the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to enjoy themselves. In other words, it'll be like eating apple pie after not eating apple pie for them. Okay? So what people have to realize, this isn't like going to drink castor oil. This is going back to the good stuff that really gives you joy and really makes you feel like, God, I'm using my time really well here. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, it's like any other addiction. You know, you see all these kids walking around and they're so focused on their iPhones that, you know, they could have a plane fall on top of them. They never see it coming. And it's sad. I mean, you walk on an airplane. I got on an airplane the other day, and I think all but two people as I walked through a fully packed plane were looking at screens.
Mm-hmm.
Something's profoundly wrong with that, in my opinion. You know, it looks like a robotic society. It looks like a nation that is are people that are afraid not to feel the importance of being connected. So I think a lot of people, especially young people, use their phones to make themselves feel connected, they make themselves feel some value because they're chatting with somebody, mm-hmm. or they're getting likes on their Facebook page or Instagram page. And so I think there's a lot of attempt to build self-worth, but it's very artificial, obviously. And what they're losing is, you know, I hardly ever see kids playing on a playground anymore. I grew up on baseball diamonds and football fields, you know, fishing, and some hunting, not much. But I grew up outside. When I wasn't reading a book inside, I was outside. And so you see there's participation in sports is way down. And the lot, you know, there's obesity is just rampant, especially among young people. And this is due to lack of exercise, junk food, and sitting in front of screens for hours at a time. So the point is, just put it away for an hour or 2 hours. You know, put it, lock it in the drawer. Don't worry about it. The world's not going to end. You know, end while you're digging into Dante again, the first time since college, or watching like one of the movies that I recommend, John Ford's Three Godfathers with John Wayne, which is a nativity story. It's a wonderful movie. Or David Lynch's The Straight Story, which is about a brother who drives his tractor 400 miles to get forgiveness from his brother. Story about love and forgiveness and friendship. And what you do is when you finally do that, you realize, I just got fed, so to speak. I just got nourished. I just got in joy. That is, I was given the gift of joy. And because I got away from whether it's the drowning radio shows or the music or the insipid television, I feel like I'm a more alive person and a better person for other people to be around because I have spent some time with these exemplars of beauty, truth, and goodness.
You raised something there that I wanted to close our time together with today, and that is friendship. We live in a very fractured society. It's turned into a very, my opinion, your opinion, and it always seems like it's confrontational. So what can the classics teach us about friendship, coexisting together, and how can we implement those lessons in our fractured society?
Well, you know, the great friendship between Don Quixote and Sancho Panza is an example. Sancho Panza was entirely aware that Don Quixote, you know, had some screws loose. But he served him and he protected him and he admired him. Their differences was not something that separated them. And they had a bond in spite of all their differences. And, you know, frankly, for the first 45 years of my life, I had very deep friendships with non-Christians, atheists, agnostics, political liberals, homosexuals, lesbians, all kinds of people that I had fundamental disagreements with. And the differences we had, we laughed at or we discussed, but it never became something that tore us apart. And somewhere along the way, differences, especially political, became moral condemnations. In other words, if you disagree with me on this political point, I am morally superior to you. Therefore, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And I don't want anybody else to have anything to do with me. So once differences were elevated to the category or height of moral value judgments about the other person, you know, that's when the foundation for friendship was lost. Because the foundation of friendship is the seeing the good in the other person, and they're seeing your good.
Yeah, absolutely. Then that's a perfect way to end this interview. Deal, where can people find your book, How to Keep from Losing Your Mind?
Well, my publisher is Tan Books. They can go to the tanbooks.com website. But Amazon, of course. But I'd love it if they go to Tan. Tan will make more money and they'll get the book more quickly. Also, buy the Kindle version. which I think right now is selling for like $8 on Amazon. And there you get all the hot links, but you don't get the pleasure of holding this beautiful book in mm-hmm. your hands, which I think Ken has done a great job of publishing.
Yes. Yes. Well, Deal, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us today. Any closing thoughts?
My closing thought is that my book was intended to be a book that sends its readers outside of the book to all the things that the book addresses and all that those things represent. And so this is not meant to be prescriptive or meant to give you marching orders. It's meant to encourage readers to, you know, to go back to the things that for centuries have proven to be life-enhancing.
All right, excellent. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, and until next time, God bless.
This is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.